if he really does want to play and feels that this is where, and that he thinks that he might get a chance again. I'm not saying he's going to walk straight into the team, you know, he's good. I'd rather hear it from him. If he says that he doesn't really want to, fine.
The Irish squad has been announced for the four end-of-season friendlies. Shane Duffy makes his long-awaited return to the senior squad, while Stephen Ireland remains absent. Shamrock Rovers gear up for an Aviva Dream clash with Premier League runners-up Liverpool, while the women's Irish team lose out to Russia in the World Cup qualifiers. This is the Why Big Football Show on Freak FM. I'm Dave O'Grady. If you'd like to contact the show, you can tweet at Freak FM or visit Freak FM on Facebook. I'm going to be talking to Shamrock Rovers defender Luke Byrne shortly on the show, but first I want to look at women's soccer, because Russia have put a dent in Ireland's World Cup hopes with a 3-1 win in Tallaght Stadium. And I'm delighted to be joined by Irish women's manager Sue Ronan. Sue, thanks a million for joining us on the Why Big Football Show. Looking back at the Russia game, there was a good crowd there, quite disappointing to really kind of concede goals on the hop, really. Russia, they broke very quickly and they had the ball in the back of the net, kind of shell-shocked us almost.
Yes, that's correct, Dave. It was a disappointing result, and indeed the first 20, 25 minutes or so were quite disappointing performance-wise as well, and the players are the first to put their hands up and admit that themselves. They were disappointed with themselves, and I suppose particularly disappointing after coming off the back of a really good performance against Germany, who we all know are one of the best teams in the world and are beating everybody around them quite easily. We lost that game quite narrowly, but you know, we prepared very well going into the Russian game. We knew their tactics. We felt they might be a little bit vulnerable. We weren't certainly underestimating them, because they're a top team, and in the quarterfinals of the European Championships last year, barring because of the toss of the coin, they missed out. But you know, they're regularly qualified for finals, and so we didn't underestimate them. But you know, I don't know what happened. It didn't start off well. It was one of those things. It started off a bit sloppy, and you know, then things went from bad to worse, because we conceded an early goal, and then when you concede two quick goals, I think that really dents the confidence of any team, you know, and that was giving us an uphill battle straight away. But we changed things around, got ourselves back into it a little bit, and then again another counterattack, conceded a third goal before half time. So that really, you know, was the game gone for us at that point, which is disappointing. But I have to give credit to the girls for the second half performance. They stuck at it, they kept going, they tried to get something out of the game. But as I said, 2-0 down and 3-1 down against one of the top teams in Europe, it gave us an uphill battle that we were never going to overcome.
That's one of the things. I know, as you said, you were talking about the Germany game and the fantastic performance by the Irish team in that match, and playing against probably the best team in the world. And Russia, we were thinking that, yes, we can take confidence in there, but it's very hard to underestimate a great Russian side, because Russia are the type of team that they can go away from home and pick off these great scalps. I think these qualifiers, playing home and away, that doesn't really matter. It's been kind of like that right through the campaign.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't really matter, I suppose, an awful lot. Yes, we had a great crowd of Mentala for our two home games, but, you know, and while they obviously help us and try to encourage, they do encourage us, and, you know, it feels like it's a 12th man at times. It doesn't make as much of a difference, I suppose, as it might in the men's game, where you have 50,000 fans, you know, cheering the home team on. But like, Russia are very well equipped, and they are a top team, and in women's football, the teams tend to play exactly the same away from home as they do at home. You know, they don't change their philosophy, they don't go away intending to try to shut up shop and close down the opposition, you know. And again, we know from the men's game how good and how strong Russian teams are, you know. So yeah, we were up against it from the word go, but as I said, we went into the game with lots of confidence, and maybe, you know, there was a little bit of pressure on us in this situation, because against Germany there was no pressure. It was bonus territory as such, and that's what I was stressing to the players beforehand. Anything we got out of that was going to be a huge bonus, and we very nearly did it. So there was no pressure whatsoever on the players, and maybe a little bit of pressure got to them, because we wanted so badly and still want so badly to finish second in the group, where, you know, it at least gives us a chance of potentially reaching a playoff. It doesn't guarantee you, but it gives you the opportunity. And we want that so badly that maybe the pressure got to them because they knew they really had to beat Russia to get that. And that could have been one of the reasons why we just started slowly, you know. But as I said, great credit to the girls for trying to dig themselves out and for sticking out, because 2-0 down early doors to a team of that calibre and a team that were playing really, really well, it could have gone from bad to worse. So, you know, we dug ourselves out a little bit and certainly showed what we're capable of in the second half.
Indeed, it reminded me of the old cliche of sometimes Ireland might just be better as the underdogs in that situation.
Yeah. For sure, I think that's correct, probably.
Looking at the group, I suppose, at the start of the campaign, I mean, the likes of Germany, Russia, Slovakia, Slovenia and Croatia, I mean, it's a tough group with tough teams. I mean, a lot of travelling, no doubt. I mean, you're playing over quite a lot over the eastern side of Europe. When you guys seen that group, you obviously knew there was a huge mountain of a task. How do you rate where we are now? Do you feel it's a bit fair, or no doubt the girls are very disappointed, Sue, that we're not actually further up and we have slipped 5 points behind our playoff rivals, Russia?
Yes, I mean, we are disappointed. As I said, we targeted second all along. You know, when you're in a group with Russia or with Germany, first of all, it's very hard to qualify in women's football for the World Cup from Europe, because out of 53 teams, only 7 go through. And I mean, that's a very, very small amount. We've got 6 groups, each winner plus the best runner-up of all of those. And that's only chosen from 4 runners-up. They play home and away in a sort of semi-final and then a final. So, you know, it's another 3 games. So it's a huge, huge ask to qualify even as one of the best second. And again, like, we're the 3rd seed and we're about 8 or 9 places behind Russia. And again, in women's football, there's a big difference between the 1st seed and the 2nd seed, yeah. The 2nd seed and the 3rd seed, you know. So while that has always been our intention, I suppose the real challenge for us and the real aim for us was to be sure to maintain our 3rd seed ranking going into the next qualification series, which is the European Championships for 2017. At that point, you know, we'll have enough of the young players. We'll have come of age at that point. We'll have got a lot of experience, a lot of game time. We'll have played these top teams. We'll have come to a lot of development here at home. Our league is getting stronger. We have them on strength and conditioning programs now the last 3 months, and that will obviously have a knock-on effect in the next couple of years. So I suppose maintaining that seeding has been the priority, and to do that, we really have to make sure we finish 3rd at least, you know. And so we're there at the moment, and we're still going to push on. We've Russia to play away, which is the second. We've got 2 games in June. We have a home game against Croatia, then we're away to Russia. So that's a tough doubleheader, as you mentioned. There's a lot of travelling involved, obviously going to Russia and then Slovenia. We've been to Slovenia already. We have to go to Slovakia yet, and Germany has a doubleheader as well, away from home in September. Yeah. So not easy places to travel to, you know. But if we finish 3rd in the group, which, I mean, is a very minimum for us, at the end of the day, we have to be happy with that. Of course, we'd be disappointed that we haven't beaten Russia to 2nd. And as we said, that was the target at the beginning of the group. But really, I suppose, the very minimum we need is to maintain our 3rd seeding. And then in the next competition, the top 2 in each group are going to go through, because it's extended the competition a bit, like in the men's. They've gone out from 12 to 16 yeah. finalists for 2017. So that will certainly help then. Second seed or 3rd seed better, you know?
Yeah, it's a great idea as well. And as you said, there's a lot of bonuses regarding the up-and-coming young Irish players that you have at your disposal. And we'll talk about the under-19s in a minute. But I just want to touch on the defeat to a very experienced Basque side in the town of San Sebastian, or it was actually 16 miles south of San Sebastian, I do believe. But nevertheless, this defeat was full of positives. You did lose 2-0 to a quality side with, I think, something like 7 Spanish internationals, but it was a real chance to try out a few players, and Niamh Fahey making a big return from a cruciate knee injury. Great to see.
Yes, it was. I mean, Niamh, it's been a huge loss not having Niamh the last year. In fact, Niamh hasn't played with the national team since December 2012. We were just trying to count the games. I think she's missed 13 games since then, so that's a huge amount for someone of her experience to be missing 4. So it was great to have her back on Saturday in the Basque, and it was a great occasion over there, I have to say. When I took the game on, I thought I'd have a stronger team at my disposal. I knew it was going to be an opportunity to test some of the fringe players and the younger players, but unfortunately exams here for a lot of the girls are still in college, as you probably know, and a lot of them had exams, and then as well some couldn't get off work for the game. They're just taking so much time off to play for their country that when it comes to a game like this, that it doesn't have the same importance obviously as a competitive game. They just have to weigh it up and decide, well, which is more important, which do I need the time off work for? And you can understand that also. So while there was loads of positive from it, I suppose it was a bit disappointing that only four players from the Russian squad, two that started and two that were in the squad that didn't get on last Wednesday, were actually available to me for the Basque game. And as I said, I would have liked to give all the fringe players a game. But having said that, it was an opportunity to bring five of Dave Connell's under-19s with me. And some of those girls actually were only 17 years of age. So it was a huge, huge experience for them to train with players who are older, have been around, and just to come into our environment and see what's required to step up to the next level. And we certainly played a very, very good team with experienced players. And you mentioned, yeah, it was six or seven Spanish internationals who'd been away with the national team the week before. And they, like the Spanish teams, as you know, would play like the Barcelona way, yeah. And there's a lot of movement in midfield, and it's just stuff that I suppose some of our players, particularly the younger ones, would never be exposed to before. So it was a learning curve for them, and some of them acquitted themselves very, very well.
And as you said, you have a few of those players from the under-19s, and they've got a huge draw at the European Championships. They've got England, Sweden and Spain. That's going to be a lot of experience for these players coming through, and perhaps this is going to benefit the girls when they get to senior level, having played in a European Championships, albeit it is a very tough draw for them, but as you said, experience all the time.
Well, exactly, and you know, I think that's what the national team has been lacking over the last number of years. We haven't had under-19s coming through who have that experience of playing in the finals, and you know, you can't underestimate that experience that other countries have, and the Russias, the Germanys, England, Scotland, Holland, all these countries are pushing on, but the Russians and the Germans, they qualify for finals, underage finals, all the time. Russia, in fact, won the under-19 finals in 2005-2006, and indeed, the nucleus of that team now are in and around the national squad, so that's the type of experience they have. And I mean, you can't buy that. You can put players in any type of situation in a strong national league and friendly matches, even in competitive matches, but unless they have that experience of playing in those type of situations, you know, it's something that we've really been missing, and it's absolutely fantastic for us that our 19s have made that breakthrough, and I've no doubt it will have a knock-on effect for us in years to come.
Yeah, we wish them the very best of luck. Just before I let you go, Sue, a quick point about women's soccer in general and particularly Ireland. I know that women's soccer is one of the fastest growing sports in the world at the moment. It's really exciting to see, and you yourself have seen great crowds in Tala for the home games, and there's been a great buzz around these important matches, particularly when the Irish women's team is challenging. How would you rank Ireland in terms of, are we well on course for right in the mix with the huge growth of the women's game? We're not getting left behind by any chance. You think there's a lot of work getting done here?
Yes, absolutely, and a huge amount of growth has gone into the game since we started a particular program, a grassroots program for young girls called Soccer Sisters, you may have heard of it.
Yeah.
And basically it's an introduction to football program specifically for girls aged between 7 and 12 years of age. Before that program started in 2006-2007, any young girl that age that wanted to play football for fun, or I know we try to encourage to get involved, went on our summer soccer schools, which are our mainstream camps that are very popular and happen all around the country, but they're predominantly attended by boys. So you could have had a situation in an area where there's 100 on the camp and there's only 3 or 4 girls in that. So as you can imagine, unless they're really, really good or they're outgoing girls, they're not going to have a good experience and they're not going to come back. So, you know, we decided we needed a grassroots program, particularly for girls alone, and we started Soccer Sisters. Since its inception in 2006-07, I'd say we've had close to 20,000 young girls have participated in that program. It's evolved to an Easter camp style situation as well. And a lot of those girls have gone on to join teams in the local area, and they've just stayed with football. And that's where the huge growth has come from. And of course, they're now obviously a bit older. But we continue continue to grow that and continue to run that program out. But we grew the game hugely since then. Our numbers of registered players have doubled. Our leagues have doubled. The strength of the leagues has come from strength to strength. And we have, of course, our national league, which is our top league for our elite players. So we're not getting left behind, for sure. There's more and more girls coming into the game, and we're encouraging them all the time and trying to help them. You know, at the end of the day, we want any girl of any ability, of any age, any area in the country to have an opportunity to play football.
Yeah, this Aviva Soccer Sisters, a fantastic FAI program, basically created to introduce girls playing soccer and utilising the facilities worldwide. Sue, it's also great from a social media point of view that there's a lot more knowledge now about the women's team, and we see a lot of the Irish men's players tweeting pictures, good luck to the girls, and that's got to be a huge boost for not just yourself but the whole team.
Of course it is, absolutely. And I think, you know, social media is obviously very big now, and particularly amongst young people, and it's a great avenue for women's sport in general. I think they don't get the same exposure in the press, as you know, and TV, etc., but a huge area where there's a huge exposure for them, and where they pick up the fans and followers because of the access is through social media. So that's obviously an avenue where we look at strongly and we tap into. So hopefully that will continue.
Well, Sue Ronan, thanks a million for joining us on the Why Big Football Show. We wish you the very best going forward in the qualifiers and the friendlies and women's soccer in general. Onwards and upwards, as they say. Thanks for joining us.
No problem all day. Take care.
Freak.
I'm really delighted to be joined here on League of Ireland Go Mouth by one of the best young talents in the League of Ireland, in my opinion, and a lot of people's opinion, Luke Byrne of Shamrock Rovers. Luke, thanks a million for joining us.
No problem, man. Thanks for having me, Dave.
Now, Luke, first things first, I have to look back at the great win you guys had there up in Derry. There was boos ringing out at the end of the match from the Derry City fans, and we've seen what happened, obviously, to Roddy Collins and that. But for you guys, a huge result. You guys are chasing that title. To go up there and get 1-0, you must be very pleased.
Yeah, obviously, no matter how Derry has been doing this season, the Brandywell is always a very hard place to go, and on the night, I thought they actually played quite well. They made it difficult for us, but we were happy with how we played, and we maybe could have won by one or two more goals. So the main thing was the 3 points, and as you say, it's a really good 3 points up there in our chase at the top of the table.
Exactly. It really gave you guys the push, and it's turning out to be a pretty good season for you guys. Second place in the table behind St. Patrick's Athletic. We've seen the early moves by Dundalk, but is the league, do you think, starting to take shape now, and we're going to see the real challengers with yourself, Pats, Dundalk and Cork? Of course, it's been very competitive this year. You guys will be hoping to continue that push right up till the end.
Yeah, as I say, the league's probably starting to take a bit of shape now, and for the first few games, I didn't really look at the league. I just wanted to concentrate on how we were playing and picking up as many points. But now that we're 12 games in, there's definitely kind of a pattern kind of emerging, and there is a bit of a little pack at the front there that are probably at the top of the table for the last few weeks. I think it's Sligo. Sligo are definitely they're on their way back. They maybe had a little bit of a tough start, but they've been picking up points. And obviously, they won the cup on Friday, so you can never write them out. But from our perspective, it's just about picking up as many points as possible and just taking one game at a time. We're not really getting worked up on talking about winning leagues and that. It's just, can we pick up 3 points every Friday night, and we'll see how close we go at the end of the season.
We've seen Shamrock Rovers over the past few years, particularly after they won it and then they had the exploits in the Europa, and it was like dream world compared to what League of Ireland clubs are used to. But then back home in Ireland, there was a lot of pressure on them and it seemed to maybe get to the players. But this season, the fact that the League of Ireland is so competitive, Luke, and we see so many teams that feel that they can challenge. We had John Caulfield, Cork City boss, on the show 2 weeks ago, and he was saying, you know, there's so many teams that are actually going for it. Maybe the fact that it's so competitive, has it taken a little bit of the pressure off you guys?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, talking about the expectation, I think Shamrock Rovers are the biggest club in the country, and the whole Europa League thing was great for the league and great for domestic football, and maybe that even raised expectations a little bit more. But in terms of comparing expectations to the last couple of years, obviously, it's only my first year here, so
yeah.
I'm not really in a position to speak about how players cope with expectations at the club in the past. But as a group this year, we don't really talk about it. I mean, we all know that we want to win trophies and we want to win games, but we don't really talk about the long run, and we don't look 3, 4, 5, even 4 or 5 months down the line. You know, that way we look at trying to pick up points on a Friday. And I think because there's so many teams going for the title this year, there's teams dropping points probably in the title race every week, and it's going to keep it open and entertaining, I suppose. And we just want to be part of it for as long as possible and see where we end up.
Yeah, indeed. And I know at the club this year, we have the Shamrock Rovers B team, and maybe yourselves and Cork City are probably the two teams in the country that have real strength in depth. Does that put a little bit more pressure on players that are in the starting squad, the likes of yourself, and that to keep the performances ticking over, or else there'll be lads behind you looking to take your place?
Absolutely. I think any squad or any team that want to be successful, they have to have strength and depth. You've seen Man City win the Premier League yesterday, and I think the thing that came between them and Liverpool at the end of the season really was their bench. I think they had a better bench, and that helped them at different times during the season. So definitely it's having a good bench and a good squad is something that our manager can draw upon. And like I personally saw, I was out of the team a few weeks ago when I got a suspension, and before I could come back in, Sean Heaney scored and played really well, and he kept his place, which is, that's the right thing to do. I mean, when someone comes in, they take their chance, they've got to play in the team, and I think that's helped us this year. It's going to make us stronger, and it's already proved in the game so far that our squad is very important. People come off the bench and they've rescued us points.
Yeah, it's great to see, and it's great to see the likes of Stephen McPhailen all in there as well. It's a real team that has a bit of everything. It's not just a passing fluidity. You can play, do the grafting and play ugly, and that's what I think a title-winning team has.
Yeah, I think you can't, if you're going to win the league, you can't play pretty every week. You can't win 3, 4, 5 every week. No team in any league can do it. You've got to be able to dig out results, whether that's away from home or late goals, whatever that may be. I think we've proved away from home we're quite good this year, and we've showed how fit we are and how much character we've got in the squad, that we've rescued points at the end of games like against Limerick and against Derry. And as you said, having more than one way of playing is only something that's going to help you, because teams won't really know what to expect week on week.
For a young player like yourself, Luke, you made the big move from Bowes to Shamrock Rovers, and it's like really crossing a threshold, as a lot of people would say. Did it take you long to be accepted by the Shamrock Rovers supporters? I know sometimes when players do tend to move from rivals clubs, there's a little bit of hesitancy. How do you feel that went? Were you integrated straight away?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I've felt welcome from minute one, and that's from the coaching staff, then to the players, obviously, and then the fans. I felt it on Friday night. I mean, obviously, when I went back to Dalymount a few weeks ago, there was a bit of a stick given my way, but I enjoyed it. I didn't mind it. And everybody who plays into a game Friday night has a right to an opinion, and I don't mind that. But no, every Friday in Tala, and no matter where we played, I felt been made to feel really welcome. And I can only thank the fans, I suppose.
And what's it like playing on the other side of a Dublin derby? It must be surreal. You've been so used to playing with Bowes and the fans and that, and now you're playing for Shamrock Rovers, and it must be a new experience for you.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it was actually quite odd. It did feel quite odd. It's the biggest game of the season in both camps, really, and maybe lining up on the other side this year, it's like going to Dalymount early on in the season, where I was used to calling my home ground the last couple of years. It felt a bit odd, but once the final whistle or the first whistle goes, any kind of nerves or any kind of thoughts previous to the game go out the window. It's just another game of football, and I'm really enjoying it, and thankfully that night we got the win as well.
Yeah, and once you're not doing a Teddy Sheringham and going into the wrong dugout if you get subbed at that, you'll be doing well. I have to talk to you, Luke, about this big game that we have at the Aviva Stadium coming. Liverpool taking on Shamrock Rovers. I suppose it would have been the perfect match had Liverpool caught the Premier League title. It's a huge game for the league and Shamrock Rovers. I guess it's to showcase Liverpool to Ireland like they did last year when they came over. But having said that, it's certainly something that you can look forward to.
Yeah, it's a really good opportunity, and it's like nothing. It's like no other game that we're going to get to play this season, I suppose. Well, that'd be if we don't get to the cup final in the Aviva. But I mean, there's going to be 40,000-50,000 people there. Liverpool, the Premier League team, coming over with international players, and they've just gone so close to winning the Premiership. It's going to be an unbelievable experience and a really good opportunity for us to show to people how good we are and how good the league is, and that there's good players in this league.
And do you guys expect, do you know if you're going to be fielding the top team? I know, obviously, if you ask a lot of Shamrock Rovers, you know, the management, they'll probably say, well, the League of Ireland is our main priority and the game against Athlone will be, you know, our highest priority. But nevertheless, as you said, it's a chance to really get an experience there. I know a couple of years ago when an Airtricity 11 was taken on Manchester United, they didn't have the Shamrock Rovers players because Rovers had big matches, I think, in Europe at the time. But are we expecting a strong Shamrock Rovers outfit?
Well, obviously the league is the priority, and we've got a big game coming this Saturday. But no, we've got our full attention on this game, and obviously we've got to see who's fit and that. A couple people took knocks on Friday night, and we've got a good squad. So whoever plays, I don't think the quality will drop. But no, we've got a full team, and we're really looking forward to it. We're preparing for it very seriously, and we're not writing it off. It's just a little friendly. We want to go out there and do well.
Yeah, it's going to be a terrific occasion altogether. There's no doubt about that. Just before I let you go, I have to ask you about your long-term goals, Luke, because we've seen young players now, they've done well in the League of Ireland and they've maybe played an extra few seasons and then gone over to England or that. But would that be something in your mind maybe in the future? I know Seamus Coleman, when he was at Sligo Rovers, he said one of the keys to his success in his playing days now is the fact that he stayed an extra few seasons at Sligo Rovers. Would you be viewing a move maybe in the distant future?
Yeah, well, since I was young, it's always been my dream to go and play in England and play at the highest level possible, and that hasn't changed. I'd love to go and play in England at the highest level I could, if that was something that became possible for me, something else to do. But at the moment, I'm just concentrating on training and playing well with Shamrock Rovers and trying to stay in the team and do my best. That's the main thing. And if I do well there, you never know what may happen. But I try not to think about it too much, because I think if you focus on it, it can kind of take away from maybe your form and your club, which is the main thing at the end of the day.
Well, certainly if Seamus Coleman is the wonder right back, maybe you could be the wonder left back going forward in the future. Just very finally before I let you go, I know you were tweeting a bit about Liverpool throwing away the title. You're a big United fan. That must
massive,
have been
yeah.
It must have been a little bit of a relief for United fans like yourself, because as hard as it was to see Man City win the title, a lot easier than to see it go to Merseyside.
Oh, that's it. I mean, being a United fan, you don't want to go on anywhere except for the red half of Manchester. But if I had to pick now in that two-horse race, it was Man City all day long. I don't know if that's because most of my friends are Liverpool fans or what, but I don't think we'd hear the end of it as if Liverpool won that league. So I'm happy enough with City winning. If United can't, if it means Liverpool don't win it, that's the main thing.
I think a lot of people are echoing your sentiments, well, the big United fans anyway. Luke Byrne, thanks a million for joining us on League of Ireland Goalmouth. We wish you the very best of luck against Liverpool and for the season ahead. No doubt you're going to be up there at the top table when the business end comes into play. Thanks a million.
Cheers, Dave. Appreciate it.
Get with the times. We're online and we're in your pocket. Just search for FRQ.FM and boom! There we are. Simples.
And to get down to the nitty gritty of the Irish squad, which has been announced for the four upcoming friendlies, I can't wait. There was a lot of talk about the squad, what, who might be in, who might be out. There's a lot of playoff action. I've got a terrific panel to discuss it on the Why Big Football Show. John O'Neill of Why Big, thanks a million for joining me, John. A lot to talk about. A lot of people said the squad picks itself, and one of the most informed players is Seamus Coleman, and if you go by what Twitter and the likes are saying, he'll be disappointed not to get a run out in the England squad. I don't know if you've been following all that kind of mumbo jumbo online.
I did, yeah. Well, apparently himself and Aaron Ramsey are the two ones who are left out of the England squad who should have been included. But to show you there's a lot of clueless people out there, obviously.
Is it a case of are some people doing it, though, just to, you know, fish for a couple of for people to go mad about? Because surely in this day and age, Premier League footballers, people know what country they're playing for and where they're from. They're not all assuming that they're just English because they're playing in England.
I don't know. Well, it just goes to show you, there's that many football fans out there, that many million people, you're bound to get a few less including people, I suppose you call them, out there. But I'm sure if Coleman was available, he'd be straight on the plane for England anyway. And he'd probably be starting, which shows you how well he's done this year. And he'd be probably the only player from the Ireland team anyway that'd be guaranteed to get straight into the England team.
And they'd be talking about him making a 27 million bumper move to Manchester United or something huge like that, whereas I know Luke Shaw, the unstoppable English defender, he's well in there. But I think Seamus Coleman is probably one of the best defenders in the Premier League, it's probably fair to say, particularly going on this season.
Yeah, well, he got voted in by the players and to right back there for the season. It's fully deserved, I think. 4 or 5 goals and a good few assists as well. But not just that, he's been an attacking threat in most of the games he's played. He kind of overlaps and he suits the Everton system. And the players, they've gotten a very attacking team this year under Martinez, and he's been a big part of it. He's kind of eclipsed Leighton Baines, who used to be their main threat from say run from Depot Coleman now is a massive threat for Everton, and he supports the midfielders very well. So even if he's not used, he's such a threat that fullbacks have to look after him and midfield have to look after him. So it opens space up for Everton, and he can do that for Ireland as well. And I think we talked on this show.
And John, we owe you a lot of credit for it, in fairness, because you were the one that said play Seamus Coleman at right back. People say no, he's not good enough defensively. He needs to be played in as a winger instead, and he can develop there. But you called it Seamus Coleman right back, and he was on the Premier League Team of the Year.
Well, yeah, a lot of people they go against, I suppose, him as defensive access. But it's just what he brings to the team. He's a very exciting player. He's great to watch. And it was a pity as well in the Trapattoni. I don't think he was allowed sort of play in that style, because the way he liked to play, he didn't like his fullbacks coming across the halfway line. But now, hopefully, Martin O'Neill and Keane would be stupid not to see that he can't kind of attack from deep. And I think he'd be more of a threat than even Aidan McGeady would be, or anyone else on the right wing. So hopefully he can start playing like that for Ireland as well, and bring his Everton form into it. And the fact that himself and James McCarthy will be getting more and more familiar playing with each other week in, week out, and maybe even Darren Gibson can only be a good thing as well. So hopefully we can see the two of them developing a good understanding together. For Ireland as well.
Yeah, there's definitely a partnership there that can be developed, and it'll be exciting to see what happens. To get down to the business though, just to name the squad: goalkeepers Ford, Randolph and Elliott; defenders Richie Keogh, Mark Wilson, Seamus Coleman, John O'Shea, Alex Pearce, Stephen Kelly, Damien Delaney. Joey O'Brien has withdrawn due to injury. He's had a bad injury and he's still recovering from that at West Ham. And Shane Duffy back in the squad. Great to see. Midfielders James McCarthy, Jeff Hendrick, Kieran Clark. I don't know why I have Kieran Clark in there as midfielders. In fact, defenders. Stephen Ward is a defender as well. He's in the squad. I have it wrong on my sheet, lads. Apologies. Glenn Whelan, Paul Green, Aidan McGeady, Anthony Pilkington, James McLean, Stephen Quinn, David Myler, Wes Houlihan. Strikers: Robbie Keane, Shane Long, Daryl Murphy, Johnny Walters, Kevin Doyle, Anthony Stokes, Simon Cox and Connor Salmon. John, what do you make of this? What's your first impressions of it? A lot of people have made the point that the squad kind of picks itself, and they were a little bit disappointed that there wasn't a couple of other names involved, maybe some of the younger players like Grealish, Eunan O'Kane and the likes.
Yeah, I suppose their chance will come. There's a lot of players that are in this squad that really haven't got a game under the new management either, so I think it's fair that he has to give everyone a look in first before we start looking at maybe the more unproven players, even though it is friendly, there's only a certain amount of players you can play. But even if the squad, I wouldn't read too much into this initial squad, because it's 32 players at the moment. Well, Joey O'Brien pulled out, so it'll be down to 31. But the squad is getting cut back for May the 22nd, I think it is. So Lonnie Dan will start taking shape a bit. And you might have, I don't know, maybe 8 or so players knocked off it. 32 players is a lot to bring. But there's 4 games there, so there's plenty of time for everyone in that squad to get a run. I'm sure maybe the players who've had kind of tough end of the season, maybe the likes of the Everton lads might get a rest for the first game or two. And maybe you'll see players who haven't been featuring as much at their club at the business end of the season. But it's a good travelling experience as well. There's 2 games over in America, so the squad will get to know each other a lot better. There's going to be a lot of travelling to be done later on in the year. Georgia will be a long distance one, as well as Scotland. So I think it's a bit too early to say in the squad the initial announcement, but it's looking good, and hopefully we can see a couple of good performances at home anyway, to get a bit of excitement back in. I don't think the first 2 performances have been as good. Maybe I think everyone was hoping we're going to go all this gung ho and Martin O'Neill kind of will get us all playing attacking football really quick, but It's the qualifiers is when it counts. But hopefully we can get a couple of good performances in the friendlies before they head off to America.
Joe McCarthy of the Irish Footballers Abroad website also joins us here on the Why Big Football Show. And Joe, what was your instant impressions of the squad? Some people were saying on social media that Martin O'Neill has picked a lazy squad. Nevertheless, he has brought back players like Shane Duffy and that, which is great to see. What do you make of it?
I think my first reaction was very much along those lines, that there wasn't a lot of development from what we've seen maybe in the last 2 years. A lot of people said that it was, if Trapattoni had picked the same squad, you wouldn't have blinked. I think promoting Shane Duffy is, you know, maybe has an eye in the future there. I was a little disappointed that some of the players that have been mentioned in the press over the last few weeks weren't included in the squad. The likes of, say, Sean Murray at Watford or Eoin O'Kane at Bournemouth. Players that apparently Roy Keane and Martin O'Neill have been to see play, but for whatever reason they decided not to call him in. There was a mention from Martin O'Neill that it mightn't be the last we see from this squad, that there could be more players called up in the near future, maybe after the playoffs have completed or after the cup final as well. It'd be interesting to see how this team actually plays, because as I say, you know, it does have a very Trapattoni look and feel to it. But as we all know, you know, the same players can play completely differently under a different manager. Like the lads were saying, you know, are we going to see Seamus Coleman pushing forward? You know, how is his relationship with Aidan McGeady and James McCarthy developed at Everton? The lads that are involved from Hull City, you know, how is their relationship? You know, what kind of partnerships are we going to see there? Are we going to see a new centre half pairing? I think Damien Delaney has been outstanding for Crystal Palace.
Yeah, he's quite an experienced player. The age of him, Joe, I think he's in his 30s, but nevertheless, he's going to feel like he has something to offer this Irish team, playing pretty much every single match for Crystal Palace this season, and a decent Crystal Palace team since Tony Pulis took over. He would have learned a lot, particularly through doggedness, which Tony Pulis would have brought to Palace. He'd be in there with a shout.
I definitely think so. I mean, obviously playing at a higher level than some of our other defenders, you know, he's definitely put his hand up. He scored a crucial goal, I think, against Liverpool that brought Crystal Palace back into the game. You know, they were 3-0 down, and you know, he scored, and you know, they went on to draw 3-3, which you know, I think a lot of people are saying, you know, took the title away from Liverpool. I think Martin O'Neill has a good history of working with centre halves. I mean, if you go back to even to Leicester and Celtic, you know, the likes of Matt Elliott, Bruce Fulharin, Johan Mjalby, and then, you know, obviously Richard Dunn as well at Aston Villa. You know, he's a history of getting a lot out of his defence, both from a defensive point of view and also from set plays. I think Richard Dunn had his best goal scoring season was under Martin O'Neill at Aston Villa. So it'd be interesting to see what happens there. Maybe, you know, I think Steve Guppy was brought in as someone who could work on set pieces. It'd be interesting to see what he can do with the likes of Delaney and Shane Duffy.
Just to bring you up on the Shane Duffy point, it's great to see him back in the squad, Joe. He's had a great season for Yeovil Town, albeit they got relegated, but he was their player of the year.
He was very highly rated at Everton. He didn't get much of a look in last season. I know he was recovering from injury, and a new manager came in, maybe he didn't want to take a chance on him. So, you know, I think the loan move has worked out really well for him. He's had a full season of, championship football, where he's had to, you know, Yeovil probably one of the smaller sides in the division. So they were always kind of fighting a losing battle. And, you know, he's been one of their best players. You know, I think he's going back to Everton. There's talk that maybe Sylvain Distin could be moving on. Johnny Hiding left during the season, so I think there's definitely a place for him available at Goodison Park in the starting 11. Be interesting to see now how Martinez works with him over the close season, and what his situation is come the new season in August.
Playing the best part of a championship season will have done him no problems at all. There's no doubt about that. Pete Kelly of ExtraTime.ie also joins us here on the Why Big Football Show. And Pete, we've heard the team and we've seen the players that he's brought in. A lot of them are the same old players, like, but we talk about Glenn Whelan and the likes, and people aren't too happy when they see the likes of Glenn Whelan and Paul Green and that in. And Green found himself under Mick McCarthy, took him under his wing there at Ipswich and gave him a good few games. And Glenn Whelan has had a very good season for Stoke City in a good Stoke City team. I think it's the first time Stoke have finished in the top half of the Premier League, which is very impressive. What was your opinion of the Irish team? Would you go along with that? Did you have those initial impressions, like Joe, that it was a lazy squad selection?
No, well, I think you could say that, but you know, he's picked everybody that's almost available. You know what I mean? It's he'd be hard pressed to come up with another dozen guys who are playing at a relatively high level. So he's going to bring everybody in who ends up in the final squad when they play these games is four games, as the lads have said. So it depends on what kind of permutations and combinations he's put out there, you know. If you look at the squad, there's only two guys in there with no caps. There's a lot of guys with double figures caps and things like that. So there's a lot to be gained. There's nothing to be gained by bringing in eight relatively raw youngsters and throwing them all in at the same time, getting their ass tanned against some crowd. So, you know, you've really got to introduce players piece by piece. And I think when O'Neill was asked about young Grealish, for instance, he said, well, you know, maybe the time is not right for him, but it's not that he doesn't know he's there. So I think that, I think they'll be pretty cautious. It's the end of the season. There are lots of guys tired. There will be a lot of dropouts out of this squad, I would say. Although, you know, if a guy drops out of this squad, it'll be for a good reason, because he may not get back in, you know, because no more than Trapattoni not picking guys because they wouldn't make themselves available. Keane and O'Neill certainly won't either. They're hard men and they will demand their pound of flesh.
We were talking about midfielders, Pete, and the likes of Jeff Hendrick is in the squad, and it's great to see how well he bounced back from his injury earlier in the season. And Derby County fans will tell you, regardless of whether Derby win the playoffs, Jeff Hendrick will be a Premier League player next season, purely down to his age and the performances that he put in. Players like himself will have a real chance here now to stake a claim.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And he looks like an exciting player. And, you know, Whelan has been anchoring the midfield there for quite a while. And, you know, it's interesting that he's been left there by O'Neill, because he brings a lot to the team. He's not very, you know, and you need guys like Whelan, is what I'm trying to say, really, so you can introduce guys like Hendrick. So because somebody has to sit and hold the fort. Otherwise you get run over in the midfield. And O'Neill's teams have always had a strong character in the middle of the pitch, you know, as well as strong defenders, like the lads were saying earlier on. So, you know, they're not going to throw things up easy. Whatever, you know, four or five guys are put across the pitch, whether it's home or away, there's going to be some strong men in there. McCarthy could be key to releasing the likes of Coleman in games to get forward, because if we're not dominating the middle of the pitch, you know, our fullbacks are going to be pinned back. So if you want your fullbacks, you know, to be getting up and down the line, you know, like a ricochet rabbit type of thing, you're going to have to be in control in the middle of the pitch, you know, to release them, and so that you can have guys drop back and cover when they're gone. So I think, you know, that it's good to see Hendrick in there. I think you will still see Whelan getting a lot of games. I can see Green getting games under these guys, because I think he's got, you know, he's a real Duracell bunny. You know, he'll die for them on the pitch. And that's what they're the type of players that Martin O'Neill, you know, being the hallmark of his career, those are the kind of players he puts on the pitch.
Yeah, we'll see what happens there. Joe, just to come back to yourself on a quick point, looking at the squad as a whole, it's been a pretty good season for all of these lads in there. It hasn't been too bad at all, you know. But two players that have, in fact, had not great seasons has been Houlihan and Pilkington, and, of course, Norwich City relegated. The chances are they're going to be gone from Norwich, you'd imagine, particularly Houlihan more so before next season. But disappointing for those players. They'll want to get involved with this Irish team and put on a show.
I think so, Dave. Yeah, I think. Especially in Hulin's case, he hasn't really been given much of a chance to showcase his talents this season for whatever reason. But, you know, and you'd have to imagine that he's looking at these four upcoming games as something he can do to put himself into the shop window. I know that there's going to be changes over the summer at Norwich, and we don't know what a new manager is going to do with either player. But, you know, I think he's shown certainly last season that he's well able for Premier League football, and you know, it's possible someone like Burnley, you know, coming up from the Championship, could take a chance on him if he shows, you know, that he's still fit, he's still able to create, and he's still able to score goals at international level. You know, Burnley, I think, have been playing very good football this season, very attractive, intelligent attacking football under Sean Van Dijk, and I think they're going to look to continue that in the Premier League next season, and he could definitely be an excellent signing for them.
Okay, well, you can be their middleman there, Joe, touting a couple of signings there for Wes Hula, and we'll see what happens with Anthony Pilkington as well. And as you said, Joe, these international friendlies are the perfect opportunity to put themselves in the shop window. John O'Neill, I have to ask you on a little bit of a one that tends to prick a lot of Irish fans when you mention it. Stephen Ireland, he's been doing terrific for Stoke City recently. He's had a really good run of games. He's been in good shape. I know he was saying that before he thinks about international football, he wants to tie down a contract with his club, which he has done. Martin O'Neill has completely left the door open. He says the slate has been wiped so clean. But what I really like, John, is what Martin O'Neill has done. He's put the ball firmly now in Stephen Ireland's court. He said there's going to be room for Stephen Ireland, but it's up to him. If he wants to give me a call, he can. So it's now very cleverly put into Stephen Ireland's court, and the responsibility is on him. Do you see him coming back to this Irish team?
I don't know, and I wouldn't get too worried about it either way. It's a long time ago at this stage, so if he did decide he wanted to come back and O'Neill wanted to have him in his plans, well then I wouldn't really object. I'm sure there's a certain amount of people out there who still wouldn't like to see him play, and a lot of fans that wouldn't like him after the way he went on, because it was bad treatment, bad form, regardless of what was going on, whether it was just a bit of slag on dressing room banter that he couldn't take or whatever. But he kind of left the Ireland team and the Ireland setup when he was at a good stage of his career. He was a very strong player, and he was a good talent, and we certainly could have done with him. And the way he left, well, it wasn't very good either.
I think it was more what annoyed the Irish fans, John, was more the little comments from, you know, throughout the season when he was doing so well for Manchester City. He always put little digs here and there in the press, and I think that kind of ruptured the connection between himself and Irish fans for a short period there.
It did, yeah. And then he was talking about it. Oh, it's great, these international breaks are brilliant, I get to do all this taekwondo and judo that I could never do before, or something like that. And you know, it was all at the time when he was still kind of scoring goals and he was still in good form, so he was kind of like almost dangling on a carrot and then taking it away and kind of, you know, driving around in his pink jeeps and pink alloys and whatever else he was doing. But so yeah, you can understand why a lot of fans were annoyed, but it's a good few years ago at this stage. He'd probably get a few moves. He's not the same player he was. I don't think he's as strong as he was back then. So to be honest, I'd be kind of a bit neutral on the whole thing. If he didn't come back, it wouldn't be the end of the world if he played well, because of everything that went on. If he says he's kind of sorry, or, well, I doubt he's going to say sorry, certainly not to Martin O'Neill, but if he says he wants to come back, you know, and he's willing to let things pass what went on, I mean, there's probably a lot of players there that weren't around when all this supposed stuff was happening. So if he's willing to let that go and come back, personally, I wouldn't object. But at the same time, I wouldn't be bending over backwards. I think Martin O'Neill has done the right thing. He said, look, if you want to put yourself in contention, I mean, he's no real association with the history that went on, so he's just kind of trying to come in and do his own job, which is right as well. I mean, you don't want a manager to come in and start looking at things that happened under different management, you know, 8 or 10 years ago, whenever it was. You want to come in and do his own thing, and he's a player that's available. He has to look at the best team, and the question is, would he improve the team? And there's a possibility that he could in some ways. He wouldn't be some sort of saviour to come in and change us altogether. But that this amount of time has gone on and passed by now that I think most people wouldn't object to him coming back. The lad might have a different opinion now, I don't know.
We'll see what happens. Pete Kelly, to come to yourself, I know you're a straight shooter on things, and with the Stephen Ireland side of things, I mean, we've seen a lot of it, as John says, is put to bed in the past. Everybody knows I have a soft spot for the young lad, well, the once young superstar from Cove. But a lot of people would have said that karma, throughout his career, karma came back to bite him in the backside after he had, you know, been on such a fantastic scoring form and putting a few silly things in the press and that, and then it all just kind of fell apart. But Mark Hughes has almost saved his career. What do you make of it? Do you think he will come back to this Irish squad?
I think there's every possibility. I would agree a lot with what John said there about him, you know, that, you know, he has played very well. he, you know, it's a long time ago. If he comes back, fine. If he doesn't come back, fine. I think what O'Neill will do, and I think any of us here, if we were the manager of the team, if there was a player available and he was going to improve the side and he was good enough, I'd pick him. But I'd pick him on my terms, you know, so that, and not on his terms. I think the thing with Stephen Ireland over the years, and it's probably tragic enough in a way, he doesn't seem to be the smartest man alive. And he also doesn't seem to have ever had the best of advice off the pitch. Because I think if he had a very good advisor, somebody would have told him, would have pulled him to one side and told him that the best thing to say is nothing sometimes. And he should keep saying that, because every time he opened his mouth, he made a fool of himself. He was a wonderful player, you know, but, you know, you have to look at some of these guys. They're given massive amounts of money very early on, very little education in the way of the world. I don't mean an academic type of education, and probably no real advice or no mentor that they could rely on to help. That seems to be the case with, in my opinion, with Stephen Ireland over the years. And I suppose he's done amazingly well to stay in as good a shape as he has.
Yeah, and he's done well, and he's now a Premier League player, a top half Premier League player.
Oh, he's a great player, there's no doubt about it, but whether he can do it all the time or not, what's going to happen next, doesn't he?
Fingers crossed for him, and fingers crossed we will get to see him back in the Irish squad soon. Joe McCarthy, just before we go, I know you've been keeping an eye on the playoffs because there's been a lot of Irish involvement in that. A couple of Irish players, as we said, might be playing Premier League football next season. You've been keeping an eye on these games. There's been a lot of Irish involvement. Will this take it out of them going into these friendlies? Do you think Martin O'Neill and Roy Keane will know how to treat players that have been playing right up till the end in their for their clubs?
I would imagine so. I'd imagine that they're going to get assistance from the various medical staff at the clubs as well. I think it's been a long season, especially, you know, even more so for Championship clubs. You have a longer league season. You know, if you have a Wigan have had a cup run as well as games in Europe. I think they're up to nearly 60 games this season, which is more even than any of the Premier League sides have managed. So you think there'd be a certain amount of exhaustion, I suppose, would start to set in at this stage of the season. But I mean, you know, these are professional athletes. You know, they're taken care of on a daily basis. You know, to what to eat. You know, how to exercise, how much to exercise. You know, as well as, you know, whatever their own personal fitness plans happen to be. You know, I think James McLean was once described to me as a bodybuilder who runs 10Ks. You know, there was stories of when he was at Derry that he couldn't sleep at night, so he'd go out and run, you know, half marathons or something just to tire himself out. So these are very fit professional athletes. But obviously, you know, at the end of the season, little niggles can come in. So you'd hope that the medical setup is prepared for that. You know, we're probably going to see Derby in the final now against either QPR or Wigan. And I have to say, like, watching Derby play last night, they're going to give any team a tough game. You know, even if they go through to the Premier League next season, you know, some of the football that they've been playing under McLaren has been absolutely fantastic.
And a good Irish contingent there as well.
Great Irish contingent there. Watching Hendrick last night, the goal he scored, all I could think was, you know, that's Frank Lampard. You know, a late run from midfield, you know, spraying it out to the right, and then a late arrival into the box to score from space. I mean, it's every goal Frank Lampard has ever scored for Chelsea, really. You know, the Richard Keogh in defence as well, who, you know, he didn't miss a minute of league football for them last season and was their player of the year. And you know, captain, you know, captain from the back as well. And you know, Mark O'Brien is kind of on the fringe of the squad as well. Still very young, and you know, has had some serious injuries, even though he is so young. But I've spoken of in very highly terms. You know, we could be seeing him playing Premier League football next season. which is something to look forward to.
And maybe a lot of Irish fans will get behind Derby County to get through to the Premier League and winning the playoffs. Huge Irish interest there. John O'Neill, Pete Kelly and Joe McCarthy, thanks a million for joining me on the Why Big Football Show. Now, just before we go, I'll have a quick look at the SSE Airtricity Premier League table. We've got St Patrick's Athletic running the show in first place on 25 points, Shamrock Rovers in second on 24, Dundalk and Cork City make up third and fourth, with Bray Wanderers and Sligo in fifth and sixth. Sligo Rovers on 15 points there, actually moving up the table. Derry City, who sacked their manager recently, are in 7th place, with Bowes in 8th, Drogheda United and UCD are in 9th and 10th, and Limerick have dropped down to 11th place, with Athlone Town still at bottom on 1 point. Now, hopefully Athlone Town will start putting a few points on the board. In the first division table, Shelburne still leading the way, starting to create a bit of a gap there in the top of the table, a bit ahead of Wexford Utes. Wexford Utes in second place with a game in hand. They're on 16 points, and Shelburne up top on 23 points. Galway FC in third, with Shamrock Rovers Bees in fourth place. Shamrock Rovers Bees actually had a slow start, I should say, to the season, but they've moved up now. They're in fourth place, with Finn Harps in fifth, Longford Town in sixth, Waterford United dropping down there to seventh place, with Cove Ramblers bottom, rock bottom, on 8 points. Cove Ramblers and Athlone, really the two teams not getting much from the league so far. Hopefully that will change, though, as the weeks go on. Just to look at the fixtures now for the week, if you're in the SSE Premier Division, on Friday, Cork City host Derry City at Turner's Cross, a 7:45 kickoff there. Drogheda United will take on Bowes, while Limerick host Dundalk, and UCD will take on St Patrick's Athletic. On Saturday, Shamrock Rovers will host Athlone Town at 7 o'clock. Shamrock Rovers, of course, playing Liverpool in a friendly at the Aviva Stadium on Wednesday, but on Saturday they'll take on Athlone Town in the league at 7 o'clock at Tallaght Stadium, while Sligo Rovers will take on Bray Wanderers at 7:45 on Saturday at the Showgrounds. And on the following Tuesday, Limerick will take on Cork City at 7:45, and Athlone Town will host Sligo Rovers. So a lot of League of Ireland games there. It's really exciting stuff altogether. On the first division on Friday, Galway FC will host Finn Harps, a 7:45 kickoff there, with Shelburne taking on Shamrock Rovers Bees at 8 o'clock. That should be a good Dublin derby there if you like it. Wexford Utes will host Waterford United at 8 o'clock as well, while on Saturday, Longford Town take on Cove Ramblers, 7:30 kickoff there on Saturday. So if you're near any League of Ireland match, get down to it and give the lads a bit of support. Well, I'm afraid I'm out of time here on the Why Big Football Show on Freak FM. My thanks to all our guests. Remember, you can check us out on Twitter. It's at FRQFM. And on Facebook, just search for Freak FM on Facebook and you'll be able to see it. From myself, Dave O'Grady, have a very good sporting week, and we'll do it all again next week.
Seamus Coleman. Seamus Coleman. Seamus Coleman. Seamus Coleman.